Miss something?
This is a black and gold freight train.
Catch the Hockey Show podcast at 98.5thesportshub.com and the Sports Hub app.
Dillon gives it away at the high slot to Chara, and the horn is going to sound. Another dominating performance for the Boston Bruins. They get goals from five different guys. And they destroy the San Jose Sharks here at TD Garden, 5-1.
Welcome into another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Here with you every Saturday morning, Ryan Johnston, joined in studio in Town Fair Tire Studios by Judd Surratt and Bob Beers, who will be on the call tonight when the Bruins take on the Ottawa Senators over at the Garden. Morning, guys.
Good morning.
Things just rolling right along for this team in the early part of the season.
So far, so good.
You know, we talked prior to the season. I think we even talked in the early, in the first few weeks about, how this team was going to respond to the end of their season last year, coming as it did. And, there has been almost not a single hiccup in this run so far. And now it's even gone to a different level because the last few times out, they've put on some pretty dominant performances. They're playing really, really well. And, even with that, I saw a quote from David Pastrnak the other day who said, we know that we can be better than this. Right? We know that we're not playing our best hockey. And that should be scary for the rest of the league right now because this team is blowing other teams off the ice.
It's 1 month. It's a great start. I think what the coaching staff and what management has talked about is that if you're going to experience an issue as it relates to last year and how deep they went, it'll probably be during the middle of the season. But they've gotten off to a fabulous start. I think the offense that you've seen here in the last couple of games, and we're going to talk to Bruce Cassidy about that this morning, with five goals against San Jose, you put up a seventh spot against the Rangers. And I understand both of these teams are not off to great starts and they've had some issues, but I think the offense had been trending that way, even with the addition of David Krejci back in the lineup. But structurally, the team game, the way that they like to play from the goaltender on out, it's reminiscent of what's made this team such a success here over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, I mean, the start's great. There's been some – the last two teams that they've played have been bad teams.
Sure.
They were – the Rangers were awful in that game. And David Quinn just lit into them. And then San Jose was terrible. And then Pete DeBoer led into them. And they had, 53 or 54 shots last night, lost a game
Connor Hellebuck,
to Winnipeg. Yeah, but they did it against good teams as well. I know Toronto's up and down right now, but they did it against Toronto. Tampa Bay was a shootout loss. Colorado, maybe they deserved a little bit better in Colorado. So they've done it against some good teams, and then they've played some not-so-good teams and did the job. They didn't let down. I thought that they could have let down against the Rangers. After you play Tampa and you play Toronto twice, that would have been an easy game, and it was back-to-back games, right? That would have been an easy game.
And you're on the road.
Yeah,
and,
right. Yeah. Not at all. In fact, the other way. They dominated the first period, and they were down 1-0. But they were completely in control in the first period, and then the second period they broke through.
How much of their success has been what you just said? Coming out strong in the first period.
They've outscored teams badly in the first period. I don't know what the exact numbers are.
I think it's 16-7 at this point.
Yeah.
Since Bruce Cassidy took over, the conversation about starting on time has been one that, especially at times last year, it just felt like, guys, you got to be ready to go at the drop. They'd get in a hole and they'd spend the rest of the night trying to dig their way out. Now it's exactly the opposite. It's like they get out to a lead in the first period, and this is a tough team to play against when they've got the lead.
They've proven that already. Just through the first, dozen games of the season, when they've gotten out to a lead, they haven't relinquished it. So it's been, they've been impressive, and having David Krejci back is big. Hopefully he can build on that game, which he was good in. you know, you've got a stretch now. You know, it gets a little busier. They've had some time off, even though you played back-to-back last weekend or whatever. But then there's been some time in between games. So some time to work on a few things and try to get a little bit closer to good health. I know Kevin Miller's skating again. That's a great sign. But and just try to fine-tune some things as you move forward. I mean, you got a game today that's an easy game to let down on, right? I mean, you got Ottawa in town. Ottawa's, you know, 3 wins this year in 11 games. But they beat Tampa.
2 of their 3 wins have come in the division.
So you can't afford a letdown. I mean, all these points count. All these points are important as you go along on a season, and you know that, and you're trying to build things. So, you know, I give the leadership group a ton of credit for the way that they've handled things so far this year. They've had this team ready to go, and your coaching staff, leadership group, you know, right down the line, they've been ready to go, and, you know, they've treated each game differently. Each game the same, but making sure that they park what they did the last game away and get ready for the next one.
You don't have to be an analytics genius to see the impact of scoring first and leading after a first period. And I remember Brad Marchand was talking about it on Sunday when we were in New York. Chasing hockey is losing hockey. So it just benefits you so much if you're able to come off with a good start. And for the coaching staff and for the guys on that roster, it changes the way that Bruce Cassidy and the coaching staff can deploy his lines or deploy his deep pairs and set the stage in the game. It doesn't guarantee you anything, but it certainly puts you in a terrific start if you come out ready to go as soon as that puck drops and have a lead or be playing well at the end of that first 20 minutes.
617-779-0985, of course, is the number. We can take your calls throughout this morning. Let's open things up. Maria in Watertown is up first. Hey, Maria.
Hi, good morning, guys. Just a couple of quick comments, and I'm sure you will touch upon this if you get Ty on, but the article that he wrote yesterday, I believe, with statistics regarding the Bruins, which were like the statistics are just off the charts. And if I'm a Bruins opponent, I'm racking my head against the wall thinking, how are we going to potentially beat these guys? The other comment I wanted to make regarding the San Jose game is I loved watching Brett Ritchie drop the gloves and defending teammates who are being taken runs at. I've been waiting for a guy like that for quite some time, and it warms my heart to see that. My question to you gentlemen is 2 questions. Dan Heinen, who I know brings a lot to the table, what is this young man's hesitancy in taking a shot when he has one available? And what can you tell us about Kevin Miller and John Moore in terms of if and when we might see either one of these guys in the lineup at some point? Thanks for the time. Have a great day.
I appreciate the call, Maria.
As far as Kevin Miller, it sounds like he's going to jump back into practice at some point next week. And usually coaches will say once they start practicing on a regular basis, then a timeline can start to be formed. As far as John Moore, I think he's a little bit further away. As far as Danton Heinen, let's see where he stays. He's bounced all over the place here again early in the season for Bruce Cassidy because he's so useful in so many different situations, and he's so dependable defensively, which cannot be understated as far as the coaching staff is concerned. He's got 2 goals and 4 points. I think you've seen some good things from him. Let's see if he's able to stay in that spot for a consistent amount of time and what he's able to do with it if he stays on the right side right now with David Krejci and Jake DeBrusk. And let me hedge on that because Bruce Cassidy said, assuming Brett Ritchie is back in the lineup, and he didn't practice yesterday, mm-hmm. So we'll find out a little bit more about his status here this morning, but he did say there's a chance that Heinen and Ritchie could move back and forth.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, right now there's still a hole on the right side, and if Heinen can fill it, then so be it. That's great. It's very short sample size. I know he's played there in the past, but we'll see how it moving forward. As far as Brett Ritchie goes, yeah, and I like the way he did it. His whole shift was good. You know, he went after a couple guys during that shift. He threw his weight around. It was the right time for it. He wasn't alone. He's the one who dropped the gloves, but yeah. He wasn't alone. Chara certainly was ready and willing, right?
Yeah. I mean, if Evander Kane,
David Backes was ready and willing
in front of him.
David Backes threw his weight around. I mean, you know, there were a few guys there. So Ritchie ended up being the guy that dropped the gloves. But I mean, were the Bruins getting run? Not really. There were a couple of hits there, but they were throwing their weight around pretty well as well. So, I mean, I know that I didn't like that hit at the end of the game.
That I was just going to say the same thing. It was like 20 seconds to go in the game. There was no reason for that.
16 seconds to go in the game. You know, I don't know. You played to the buzzer. I get it, but
you're down four goals.
I'm going to go run the smallest guy on the ice. Yeah, I wasn't too high on that hit. You know, you want to go run. You know, you run. You know, Kane's trying to hit McAvoy, and you know, guys like that. I get that. That's fine. You know, you we'll handle that. But you run a guy with 16 seconds to go, and it's the smallest guy on the ice. It's just like that. That to me didn't compute. But anyhow, I thought the Bruins as a team handled it very well.
From the perspective of her question about Danton Heinen.
Oh, we forgot about Marshy dropping the gloves with Couture.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, hey, you know, Couture went after him, knocked him down a couple of times. Marshy was like, hey, let's go.
And Pete DeBoer thrown out. You don't see that a whole lot.
Yeah, I didn't even know that until after the game when you told me. I didn't realize it.
He was chirping at the senior referee, apparently.
from the perspective of Heinen, ideal world, you know, regardless of what their needs at any given time might be, what is the right role for Danton Heinen? Is he a top six winger? Is he a third line winger? Is he better left side, right side? What ideally would be Danton Heinen's role in this
team? I think he was in a really good spot last year in the playoffs, third line left wing.
I would agree.
Like,
I would agree.
Coyle, yeah. Johansson. Johansson was on the right. That was a little out of position for him as well, but he handled it well. Mm. And Heinen on the left. I thought that, I mean, that line was very effective. I thought that was a good spot for him. He could do some different things, right? His two goals have come on the power play. He doesn't have an even strength goal yet this year. So he's got more offense than he's showing. It's just they got to kind of coach it and coax it out of him, you know, and work with him on that. I think he's got more offense.
Well, that was kind of her question can we get him to shoot more? I mean, it's, you know.
He's got a good shot.
Yeah.
He's got a very good shot. And the puck jumps off his stick, but I don't know, for whatever reason, he's just a little, you know, they work with him, they you do video with him, so, you know, the right side, you're kind of coming off the wing, you're coming into the middle a little bit more, and I think he gave up a shot the other night where he had an opportunity to rip one, tried to pass it, you know, he scored goals from both sides, but they both went on the power play, one from the right wing side, the other one from the left wing side, first game of the season against Dallas, so, you know, those, like I said, those were both with the man advantage. There's more offense to his game. He can make plays, but you know, you need to see a little bit more out of him offensively. And if you're not going to get that out of him, then he's absolutely a third line.
Sure. 617-779-0985. We'll get to more of your calls on the way as we get started here this morning on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The number to join us here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. Vinny is in Revere. Good morning, Vinny.
How we doing, guys? Can you hear me all right?
Yep.
Awesome. Hey, real quick, I was a little skeptical at the beginning of the season, obviously coming off the Game 7 loss. When hockey season was ready to start, I don't even think like most of my friends were ready to watch hockey again, but I think everybody was like kind of in shock that the team come out so great and is playing really well. My quick question is, if we get to the midpoint of the season, let's just say we're deep in January, turning the page into February, and who do you think has to carry this team if there is a little bit of a drop off? Is it the young guys? Is it the veterans that have to step up and say, hey, come on, guys, we got to carry this? Do you think anybody gets a break at some point, or do you think they really put all of their time into the young guys and tell them it's time to step up?
I appreciate the call, Vinny. I mean, it's kind of looking down quite a bit down the road in the crystal ball here. But, I mean, I defer to you guys, but to me, that seems like a little bit of a combination of the two. Like
it's always a team. But no, you need the younger guys to continue to develop, right? You gave contracts in the offseason to Carlo and McAvoy, to Heinen. you know, you need these guys to continue to develop. You know, we just talked about Heinen for a few minutes, but, you know, Carlo McAvoy, okay, you know, where are they? Do they continue to get better and better, you know, or do they hit a wall? That those guys right there, that's a huge, huge part of your defense, especially on the right side, right? Those are your two, top two right shot, right defense. Those guys are going to see a ton of minutes and a ton of important minutes. They have to continue to develop. I'm not worried about some of the other players. You know, some of the top players, if they do hit a little bit of a wall at some point, they'll break through it because they've been there. They've been able to do it. You know, they've been through this before. Mm. So, you know, a lot of the veteran guys have. So I'm not concerned about that. You know, you go back to some of the comments made on Media Day. Donnie Sweeney said, look, you know, paraphrase, but he said, at some point we know we're going to hit a wall. You know, and we just got to bust through it. Right. You know, very few teams just cruise through a season like Tampa did last year. You know, you have to face some adversity. You got to fight through some of the different things, whether it's injuries, whether it's playing poorly, whether it's, you know, you're always trying to address different things, always trying to get better at different things. So, you know, at some point it most likely will happen, and it'll be up to the leaders to pull the young guys, but the young guys certainly have to show the continued development that they have.
Well, and that's part of the maturity, right?
It's not just those three. But there's other guys as well.
But that's part of, you know, kind of the circle of life in sports and in the National Hockey League is, you know, you need those guys as they develop. It's not just about developing their game. It's about developing their leadership skills as well and being able to play that bigger role when you need them or when things aren't going great for the guys that you normally rely on.
This is all part of the process of kind of transforming it from the team that it is right now to the core guys that right now to who are the future core guys, mm-hmm. you know, and to do it on the fly and to be able to do it without the rebuild that some teams have to have. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
You see teams going through these rebuild and, you know, they've set themselves up pretty well to not have to be able to not have to do that. But, you know, how do they continue to that process of adding younger guys each year so that you don't have to do that, so you don't have to go through that? I mean, you see a lot of teams going through it right now.
On Twitter this morning, Anna chimes in and says, talk about how elite Tuukka is, please and thank you. Tuukka Rask is playing, and I mean, Halak hasn't been too shabby either for most of this run, but, I mean, Tuukka Rask is playing out of his mind right now.
What's he allowed? Let's see. He's played 7 games, allowed what, 10 goals?
Something like that.
At this point, no, he's been spectacular here off the start. And the guys in front of him have been outstanding. I think giving him an opportunity to see shots, clearing second opportunities, you're going to see a further test as we go along. But he's been lights out here early in the season. And for a guy last year who got off to a sluggish start, been the exact opposite this year. He's been terrific as soon as the puck dropped. He's been sharp. He's been big. He's moved well. He's read the play. He's controlled his rebounds. He's played the puck to help his defense. He's done everything exceptionally well.
There were a couple games early in the season where the Bruins didn't have their best, for lack of a better way to put it. Dallas, I think, was one of them. First game of the year. Mm-hmm. You know, Boston was okay. You know, they did what they had to. But Rask in the third period of that game was excellent. You know, and I know Dallas off to a poor start, but they poured it on in the, you know, it's their home opener. They poured it on in the third period, if I remember right. There were a couple other games, you know, along the way where he's had to be really good. And then there's a couple other games where the team has found it, their game around him, and he hasn't had to be as good. And San Jose was one of them. You know, he was fine in that game. He was, you know, but he didn't have to be great.
Right.
But I'm not taking anything away. He's been outstanding to start the year. And now that the team is getting better and better, you know, if they can. There's always going to be a leak somewhere, right? And you're always trying to plug that leak. But, I mean, I think with the goaltending that they have, it's a good 1-2 punch. Halak's game's maybe dipped a little in the last couple games. The third period for the Bruins against the Rangers wasn't that good. They were good when they had to be, but they were a little porous defensively.
Got a little leaky. Yeah.
And then what did they do against San Jose when they got the lead in the third period? They didn't give San Jose anything. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't know how much that's on San Jose. I don't know how much is on the Bruins, but they didn't give them anything.
The Bruins haven't played a lot of games here down the stretch, so I wonder if in some ways that works against Yaroslav Halak a little bit. Bruce Cassidy talked about maybe I might get him in here at home. He hasn't played here much at home.
He'll play either Pittsburgh or Montreal.
Sure.
So they play Montreal Pittsburgh on Monday at home, Tuesday against Montreal. So we get three games in 4 days. Rask is playing tonight, so you know he'll get one of those two games.
The question is, you know, is he going to get the front end or the back end of that? You know, and I'm sure the conversation will go with, you know, Bob Asenza as far as how he wants to try and legislate that. But you're going to get an opportunity to see a lot more of both goaltenders here down the stretch with the amount of back-to-back games and the amount of frequency that the Bruins are going to be playing.
All right, well, we'll get Sports Hub headlines here. Ty Anderson will join us in studio coming up next. We'll talk a little bit about more about how this team has been playing and what he has seen out of the Bruins throughout the month of October as they open up their November schedule tonight against the Ottawa Senators. Tim McCone's in for Sports Hub headlines, and Ty is next.
It's a black and gold freight train.
All things Bruins and the NHL. It's the Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Coming up in about 15 minutes or so, we are going to give you a chance to win some tickets to go see the Bruins and Pittsburgh coming up on Monday night at the Garden. That's coming up in, again, about 15 minutes from now. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, now joined here in the Town Fair Tire Studios by Ty Anderson of 98.5thesportshub.com. Morning.
What's going on?
Maria in Watertown was waiting to hear you this morning.
Ah, so late.
I want to hear some of those stats.
Yeah. She said, you got to ask Ty about this column that he wrote. If you haven't seen it, 98.5thesportshub.com. 10 numbers from an outstanding October for the Bruins. And go. No, I'm kidding.
Gee, I was going to say off the top of my head.
Yeah.
I know they've only trailed for 80 minutes. I think that's been the biggest thing this year. They've been playing with a lead almost every night, and they've been getting a lead. And it feels like it's been Pastrnak a lot that's been giving it to them. That first period sort of power play goal, it just seems like it's become a habit now. And I just think that when you have the goaltenders playing as well as they've been playing, and you're getting that first goal, it makes life awfully difficult for their opponents.
A guy who came up in the first half hour that you had actually had a stat on is Danton Heinen. The number is 0.45, if you didn't know, by the way. Number of on-ice goals against per 60 minutes. And so we're getting into the analytics territory.
I did a little bit of analytics, just because I think both people want both sometimes. He's been, and this goes back to the playoffs last year. I thought that it didn't seem like he noticed them on the ice for goals against. And I think that the expectations of Heinen after his first year were, hey, this is a 50-point guy. Maybe he's closer to 40 in great defense or great two-way play on your third line. I mean, I would take that if I'm the Bruins.
I'd take 40.
That's what he's closer to than 50.
People, like, when him and DeBrusk were first-year guys, Heinen had more points than DeBrusk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, DeBrusk has the goals. I mean, I know that they're not coming as much this year, but, I mean, Heinen had more points than him. So it's there. You can do it. I mean, he can do it, and he doesn't have to sacrifice defense in order to do it. I'm fine with what he does on that side of the puck. I think I need to see a little bit more offense out of him.
Well, I think good teams, they have players like this somewhere in their lineup, guys that can move into your top six or into your bottom six, play on the power play, play on the penalty kill, play against top matchups. That's what a lot of good teams have. They have players who are versatile and can fill those roles. And that's a guy who has done it all over the place for Bruce Cassidy.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think that when, you know, Bjork is up here, everyone says, oh, put Bjork with Bergeron and Marchand, do that. I like the idea of putting Heinen up there because he's done it before and he's been pretty good there. Cassidy doesn't like it full time. He's sort of made that clear. But last year when they didn't have Pastrnak, they put Heinen there and he was a point per game guy with those guys. I mean, a lot of people probably can be, but that's a fit that if you have to break out Pastrnak, Bergeron and Marchand, that's a guy you could plug in there for 15 games and not worry about it.
Not necessarily. I don't think you can just put anybody up there and he's going to be a point-a-game guy. I think the odds are probably in your favor that you have that opportunity, but we've seen over the years, for a long time in the National Hockey League, just because you have two great players or a great centerman, you can put anybody there and that guy's going to be able to get points. That's not necessarily true.
Yeah, I'm just saying, though, with Heinen, though, yes. That's an example of a guy who has done it. You know, that's sort of, I feel like when we talk about breaking up that first line, if that day comes this year, everyone says put Bjork there. But I think Heinen is the guy that people should be clamoring for to put there.
That was the surprise last year in the playoffs against Toronto where Bruce Cassidy said, that's the only time where I didn't tell you the whole truth, I think, in that series, where he put Heinen up there and he moved Pastrnak in a different spot to try and jumpstart his team, and it worked.
Speaking of Anders Bjork, we've seen him in four games so far. Gets a goal the other night, so you know he's got that monkey off his back for now. But what have we seen out of him? You know, as we kind of project a little bit further down the road, is this the time that he's back here to stay?
I really feel confident about this time around because he looks so good with Charlie Coyle. I think that's been the big difference. He's not, and I like him on the left side. I think he's just been better on the left side. I'm noticing him more, I feel. He's not getting a ton of ice time, but the shifts he does get, I look at and I go, I actually noticed him out there. I feel like when he was on the right side these first 2 years, there were nights where you noticed him for the wrong reason, so to speak. But I think he's more aggressive, I feel. I feel like he's more assertive. And Bob, you know, you guys can obviously talk on this more so, but just watching him, I feel like he's a player who's feeling it right now versus his first two times up here.
Yeah, I don't want to call it a dip, but I don't think he has been as noticeable maybe the last couple of games. Mm-hmm. Thought certainly when he first came up. So that's going to be a challenge for him, and it has been a challenge for him. Nobody doubts that he can do it. Can he do it over a long-term basis? And we talked about some of the younger guys who need to continue to develop. I went right to the defensive side of it with McAvoy and Carlo, but at the forward side of it, we've talked about Heinen. Bjork's another one. DeBrusk is still very young up front. And he needs to, and he's doing some good things. He hasn't gotten rewarded on the score sheet as much as he'd like, but that's another guy that needs to continue that development and not take a step back from what he did last year. But I think for Bjork, the challenge is doing it on a night-to-night basis as opposed to once here and then once next week and then once the week after, be noticeable every night. For him, he's got the ability to do that with that skating and what Bruce Cassidy talks about, hunting pucks and being really hard on when he doesn't have the puck, making sure that he's hard on defensemen, getting it back. So in your face style type play, not overly physical, don't get me wrong, I'm just saying, like, just using that speed to help him with or without the puck.
Well, I think the guy who's been really noticeable here in the last couple of games has been Charlie Coyle. Goals in each of his last two. He's been around the puck a ton, getting opportunities, getting to the front of the net, using that big frame and his ability to wheel around. But I think two guys, since we're talking about young players who have gone wildly under the radar, has been the Bruins' third pair on defense. I think Matt Grizzlick and Connor Clifton, and we could see a change here today. It could be Stephen Kampfer who jumps into the lineup against the Ottawa Senators. But the amount of productivity and solid minutes that you're getting from those guys, I think it's been fantastic here early in the season. It's been a big weapon for the team. Grizzlick's ability to be able to exit quickly, start that breakout, begin the transition game, and I think Connor Clifton has been reliable, dependable, used his wheels, and he's made great decisions with and without the puck.
Yeah, Clifton has been this guy now that you watch him and you're sort of saying, okay, what happens now? Like, when Miller and Moore come back, what do you do? I think he's made it interesting because the way he's playing. And I know that he's sort of the guy that you look at and you say, well, you can do this with him because he's still so young. But, like, that pairing, I like that pairing a lot because they can do different things. They're not just, oh, they only get this. You can trust them in many different situations.
Well, how many times do you see when the Bruins are playing an opponent or you're watching a game and a coaching staff is throwing out that final pair or maybe they're trying to shelter a pair? The Bruins have not done that with that pair. They have been reliable even against some of the top competition in the National Hockey League. It hasn't mattered. I don't think that the Bruins are afraid of throwing those guys out in a key moment or if they have to take a D-zone draw at a crucial point of the game, whether or not they're going to be able to win their battles and get the pucks out or to be able to defend.
Time about a week or two ago when Cassidy sat Clifton out and he was asked about it. And he said part of it's a reward for Kampfer, but he also mentioned, he said Clifton's practice skills or practice habits had dropped a little bit. Feels that there were a couple things that had kind of slipped in his game and he wanted to get his attention. So, and that's always, it's good to have a Stephen Kampfer there because you can be able to do that. And Kampfer can't be happy because he lost his job to Clifton, which might change today. We already talked about that, but it for Kampfer, it's be ready all the time. But for Clifton, it's maintaining, and it's getting better and better, not just kind of, plateauing. So I thought those comments were interesting from, Bruce Cassidy. He's pretty candid all the time with us, right? But when he mentioned, practice habits had slipped and needs to get better and more attention to detail, I thought that was interesting that he'd come right out and say that.
It keeps the fire going, right? For all these guys.
When Miller and Moore come back, or Miller's first probably, usually things have a way of kind of working out. So hopefully,
and it feels like we have this conversation every year. It's like, how do they go? What, they have 8D, they have 9D. Like, what are they supposed to do?
And they can send guys down to the minors. I mean, Clifton, I don't believe, has to clear waivers. I'm not 100% sure of that. Camphor would have to clear waivers if he went down to the minors.
Yeah, it's like last year we were talking when they traded McQuaid. Like, oh, there's no room in the inn. You got to do it. Next thing you know, Jacobs Borrell's playing, you know, in Dallas. I'm like, oh, geez, I don't know about that.
Well, and you can start to see as we're heading to the end of October and we're beginning November that there are some big-time injuries that are starting to pop up around the National Hockey League. You're going to get many more games coming in a lot more frequency, and because of that, that's when you really start to need some of your depth.
Just kind of what you're talking about with Clifton, and you, it's kind of a similar thing to...
He's fun to watch play, though, isn't
he? Oh, there's no doubt. No doubt. But it's similar to... you know, Bjork, when you get a young player kind of early on, you often see a bit of a bounce from that player. And then, you know, after a few games, they kind of settle in a little bit. And how do you bring the same effort when you don't have the juice going, you know, full bore the way you do in your first couple of games
for
in the show?
Guys. Yeah, it really is. I mean, the guys that can do it, that's special quality. It really is. I mean, it's not easy. It's a grind. It's a long season. And to be able to find the consistency to bring it every night, night in and night out, I mean, that takes a lot of mental and physical, but mental, you know, the approach to the game. And I think that's where some of the leaders really kind of bring it out of you, because these guys bring it every night. I mean, you know, Bergeron brings it every night. And Marchand's gotten into that category as well, where he's just, I mean, he's the hardest working guy on the ice, the way that he goes. And, you know, Char's in another category at his age, but he brings it every night, what he's got. So I think when you're a younger guy and you come up and you see these guys, and I think Bergeron and Marchand and whoever you want to go down the line, you can't. So when I played for a little while with the Bruins, Ray Bourque was the hardest working guy on the ice in practice. So if you didn't bring it, you know, they were in your face in practice. So, you know, and it carried over to the games, you hoped. Not always, but it did. But that's the idea. And these guys, they don't have to say much. They just do it. And, you know, you better pull your weight. And it's in practice. You have those practice habits, and you continue. There's not as many practices now. You know, guys, they don't go as long. There's not as many. It seems like they've curved, you know, they've taken back. There's not as many morning skates. They're trying to rest guys. But you better bring it in the games then.
Ty, what is, in your mind, the number one reason why the Bruins have gotten off to the start that they have?
I mean, it feels like a cop out, right? But David Pastrnak, I mean, he's unbelievable. Like, I just watch him, and he's approaching that sort of Ovechkin Stamkos level one timer where he just fires it, and you know that it has what feels like a 50% chance or more of going in. He's playing so well right now, and that takes so much pressure off the right side, because you look at the right side right now, and it's been a revolving door. And then there are some nights you look at it. Pastrnak's at 22 minutes, and the next closest right winger is at 11, and that's Chris Wagner, not a guy you don't really roll out there to score goals. He can do it, but it's not his job necessarily. So I just think that's helped them out so much. It's really sort of prevented them from having to go through their entire bag of tricks here on the right side. So I look at Pastrnak's production right now. I think you're seeing him become a legitimate, I mean, he already was there in my opinion, but a legitimate superstar in today's game.
Yeah, and the thing that he's doing more of now, you know, he would just stand in that left wing circle and look for the one timer. And now there's so much more movement, and going to the power play mostly, but there's so much more movement. You know, he'll find himself on the right side, you know, and Torrey Krug will move to his left and draw the forward with him, the defensive forward with him. And Pastrnak will come way up high, get that puck. And then when he gets the pass from Krug, he starts to attack into the right wing circle. And he's got so many options there because the D has to step out and they'll take him. And they have to respect different things. He can shoot the puck from there. He can try to make a pass to DeBrusk at the top of the crease. He can go down low to Marchand. Or he can go into the slot to Bergeron, which he did the other day, and Bergeron was stopped on a one-timer. He's got so many options when he goes out like that. And that's different from what he was doing maybe 2 years ago, where he would stand in one spot in the left-wing circle and just look for a shot. So the movement by Krug and by Marchand and by Pastrnak, it creates so many openings. And the confidence in it to do it. I mean, and you talk about Pastrnak, but the confidence all over that offensive zone and what he's doing there. And it's not just the shot. I mean, the shot's great, but he's able to create, and he's setting guys out. He should have a couple more points right now for some of the setups he's had. He can fake the one-timer from the left-wing circle and go across the top of the crease to Jake DeBrusk, which he did in Toronto, and that was a backdoor pass, and DeBrusk missed it. Like, there's so many different options he's got from that. Remember the fake shot from the left-wing circle to Bergeron in the hash marks for the redirect goal? I mean, there's so many things he can do from there. And it's set up by the shot and the threat of it and how good it is, but he's got so many more things in his repertoire right now that make him dangerous.
It's a great point, because I think people overlook his playmaking skills. That, you know, this guy, 12 goals, he jumps out to the league lead. He's got 12 assists too, and he is he's such a big part of why that power play unit's the best unit in the league right now too.
There's no other power play like it in the National Hockey League. I mean, it is a thing of beauty when they go on to the man advantage and that first unit comes out because as Bob alluded to, the movement, the way they're able to crisply move the puck, the understanding of where everybody is and how they're working their options. It's almost like Tom Brady with his checkdowns. Okay, my first option, I'm looking at the bumper. Well, if the bumper's not there, maybe we're going to move it over to Pasternak. Well, if Pasternak's not there, where am I thinking next? Am I going to Torrey Krug? Am I going to Marshy? Am I going down low to Jake DeBrusk? And we've got a couple other options that the Bruins haven't utilized just yet because other teams haven't been able to stop the bumper and the one-timer consistently.
Well, DeBrusk, so we've talked about him being a little bit more effective in front of the net, but he's very effective on that power play getting to pucks. They call him retrieving right after the shot's taken or after a play's broken up. Or he's quick to get from the front of the net to a puck and keep it alive. And he did it the other night on one of the goals, on Pasternak's goal in the first period. He didn't get a point on it, but he was first on the puck. He creates, or he helps create, not allowing Dillon to clear it, and all of a sudden the Bruins are putting the puck in the back of the net. So he's very good at that type of thing. If he can develop the front of the net, whether it's screens, tips, backdoor plays, locating pucks after the shot is taken, that type of thing, he's going to have himself a lot more points, and the power play is going to be even that much better. But that's something that's still developing for him.
And he knows it. And by the way, he knows that he hasn't finished on a lot of chances that David Pasternak has set him up for. He and Pasternak had a little conversation about it in practice. They actually changed roles, and they had Pasternak down low, and they were feeding him tip opportunities and chances out in front. He wasn't able to finish, I think, on the three straight that he got down there. So Jake's like, listen, it's not as easy as you think. I'm working on it. But he said,
well, it's something he needs to continue to work on. I mean, absolutely. That's something after practice every day that should be worked on, or before practice, whatever. I mean, every day, because that is such an important component to this team. And it extends leads. It gets you leads. It extends leads, or gets you back in games. It's such a weapon. And most of it's working really well. And so is he for the most part. But if he can develop that, I mean, he could add, what, half dozen more goals last year?
Oh, easily. Absolutely. Easily he could do that. But he even talked about the fact that, you know what, I might have to go down to a knee. I don't care if the puck hits me in the mouth in order for it to go in, but I can't let those passes get by me.
Can hit a skate, too.
They have to go there.
Can hit a skate.
Yep.
It can't all be sunshine and rainbows. What worries you about this team?
David Krejci, him holding up. I mean, he looked great, but if he's not healthy, that's when the strain is on other players, I think. That's when Coyle, he's getting tougher assignments. I love Coyle in that third line. I just think that he's such a mismatch for other teams' bottom sixes in their third pairings. So I want Krejci to be upright for the rest of the season. He looked healthy. This is the first time I thought all year he looked healthy in Tuesday's game. So if he can continue to do that, this is going to be a dangerous team. I just worry about him because, you know, people label him soft, and it's really stupid in my opinion because he plays a ton of games and he often plays through his injuries. But if he's hobbled, if he's playing through something and it rears its head, that's when sort of the wheels, I think, come off the wagon here, and you're now a true one-line team.
He was I think very underrated last year, if that's possible, for a guy who's been here as long as he has and has played as well as he has. But last year especially, he was a huge part of the success that this team had last year, and I don't think got enough credit for it.
And it was a revolving door, you know, to the right side. I mean, I think their most common line mate, I want to say, was Nordstrom. Like, just looking over the year, I mean, he had to be up there close to it, you know, with DeBrusk and Krejci. Who was that other guy? I felt like the third guy was Nordstrom for a good chunk of the season, it felt like. So, career high in points last year. DeBrusk was quiet for the first half of the season. Then he was white hot to finish the year. I want to see him. You know, I want to see them get something there. I think Kuhlman could work. I thought he had a good motor. I don't know if it's a full season thing, but I just want Krejci to be in the lineup because I think that's a game changer for this team.
All right, Ty Anderson, you can read him on 98.5thesportshub.com. Good to see you as always.
Thanks, guys.
Caller number 10 right now to the Pride Motor Group contest line at 617-931-0985. We'll score a pair of tickets to see the Bruins take on Pittsburgh Monday night at the Garden. Be at TD Garden tonight when the Bruins host the Ottawa Senators. Select tickets still available at Ticketmaster.com/Bruins. Again, 617-931-0985. Caller 10 gets tickets to Monday night's game against the Penguins. We've got plenty more, a whole nother hour of the Sports Hub Hockey Show still to come, and we'll get back to your calls coming up as well.
The Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hour number two of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. I assume, Tucker, we have given away the tickets. We can tell people to stop bothering you. But you can bother him instead and talk to us. 617-779-0985. Bruins and Ottawa tonight at the Garden. 7 o'clock faceoff. Pittsburgh coming in on Monday as well. We'll talk a little bit about the opposition when Billy Jaffe joins us coming up in about a half hour. But let's get back to your calls. Let's go to Matt in the car. Matt, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I just wanted to ask you guys, I mean, the Bruins obviously have been playing really well, but, you know, with the defensemen coming back with Moore and Miller and how good Clifton and Grizzlick have been playing. I want to ask about Chara and how his durability is going to be handled this season. Obviously, he's not getting any younger, but we can see how good he's playing now. Is that something that we need to consider going down the line later in the season? And lastly, Mr. Beers, I look forward to being on the ice with you tomorrow for that alumni game with the Homes for Troops. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Look forward to it tomorrow down in Foxborough.
How were the games last weekend?
They were a lot of fun. They were a lot of fun. It was Rangers beat us here at Bentley College, and then we were able to beat them down in Madison Square Garden. So a lot of fun. It was good to see a lot of people there, well attended. So everything was everything went well. There were only a couple injuries. So on the second day, you know, back to back games, there were two injuries in the second game. So I was not one of them, fortunately, but there were two injuries. Hopefully not serious.
No, definitely. So Zdeno Chara, look, age is certainly a factor. At the same time, I would imagine his usage this year may depend largely on what we were talking about earlier, which is, do Carlo and McAvoy continue to take those steps forward? Can they handle added pressure, added minutes at times? And we know how much Z likes taking time off or days off, so that's always part of the equation too.
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to play out, to be honest with you. I think some of it depends on the situation of the season, you know, the volume of games, where you are in the standings. Is everybody healthy? I mean, Moore's not even on the ice yet, so we're not talking about John Moore right now. So there's only three guys on the left side right now. The right side will get a little bit more complicated, you know, if Miller comes back or when Miller comes back and if everybody's healthy. So that would get a little bit more complicated. So, you know, I the left side, you know, you've got your left side, and that's Krug, Grizzlick, and Chara, unless there's an injury. Will they sit him out on back-to-back games later in the season? Doubtful. Doubtful. I think the minutes kind of get kept an eye on. You know, if they're ahead in games, he's going to play, and you're going to see him out on the ice a lot. You know, if it's a close game, especially, you know, if it's a blowout game, it's 5-1 to San Jose, you're going to see him on the ice every third shift. So that's just a regular shift. But if it's a close game, if it's 3-2, you know, you're going to see him on the ice a lot more. You're killing a penalty late in a game, you're going to see him on the ice, you know, a lot more. So, but if they're behind in games, which, what did Ty say, 80 minutes. It's been
80 minutes total so far, yeah.
If they're behind in games, you won't see them nearly as much. And I think that's just, especially as the game goes on, you know, in the third period, or you're behind by a goal or two, it's just, you're not going to see him as much. So that's something that, I don't know if he's accepted, but that's been his role here. You know, you're going to shut down, you're going to play good penalty kill, and, you know, you're going to help shut down the other team's top line and play important minutes when we're ahead in games to preserve the lead. So, you know, is there a scenario where he sits out games? I don't think so. It's not in his DNA, and he wants to play all the time. Maybe they've discussed it already and they've come to that conclusion. I don't know, but that's something we'll have to wait and see. But like I said, a lot of it's going to depend on where the team is in the standings, what the situation of the season is, you know, how many games and a lot of games in a short amount of time. You know, do you envision, we talked about it late last season, do you envision sitting him out games? And what did he sit out? Did he sit out one or two maybe right at the end? Maybe.
Yeah, I think there was at least one where they...
Yeah, at least one, yeah. But I don't know
and
if
that
there
was a cage
one.
Match, I think, to get that done.
Yeah, right. it's an underrated part of coaching over the course of an 82-game season. Look, we talk a lot about it with the goalie, right? That, you know, you want to keep Tuukka under a certain number, and having a good backup helps to keep him fresh as the year goes on because you need him to carry the load when you get to the playoffs. But last weekend, when they had St. Louis here on Saturday and then they had to go to New York to play the Rangers on Sunday, I think Bruce Cassidy talked about it before that game and said, you know what, it's second game of a back-to-back, you got to kind of manage. And he's not just talking about Zdeno Chara, he's talking about a lot of you guys, talking about his first line guys. Like, you don't want to have to ride these guys, you know, for 20-plus minutes every single night if you can avoid it. And it certainly helps when the team is playing well and when they get leads, because now you can open things up to play different guys in different circumstances.
Okay, but part of the balance, and the coaching staff has talked about this, is that we're primarily worried about the game in front of us.
Sure.
And then we'll have to figure out everything afterwards. It's not as though you can just go into the game and go, you know what, I'm really going to try and keep the top line to about 17 minutes or so, and I don't want to go over that because we've got a back-to-back game. I think that the coaching staff is good about being in the moment, trying to do what's best for that game, and then dealing with what happens afterwards in that second game of the back-to-back.
They played St. Louis the other day, and there was a lot of special teams, so some of the top guys got taxed, and Bruce Cassidy talked about it in the morning. You know, we're going to try to, you know, because there were so many special teams and some of the guys got more minutes than normal, they came out against the Rangers, and the top line combined for 13 points. So hard to keep them on the bench when they're doing that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but you do get the luxury of building a nice big lead, too. And, you know, so maybe you can gear back on them a little bit in the third period.
Again, the games are going to dictate, you know, a lot of the ice time. It's not going to be the schedule. It's going to be the game.
A big part of that success that they've had so far, especially that top line, is the power play. We were talking a little bit about it in particular with Pastrnak earlier. But in your guys' eyes, Judd, you said there isn't another power play like this in the league. Is it just those three guys? Like, what makes this unit so special? What are they doing that's so difficult to defend right now?
They're unpredictable. I think when they get bogged down once in a while, it's the entries. But, you know, teams are going to try to, you know, do different things, throw different things at them entry-wise. I thought they made some adjustments the other day to get into the zone. San Jose was the number one penalty-killing team in the league coming into the game. And, you know, I thought the Bruins did a pretty good job of breaking that down as it went on. They ended up 2-for-8. Some of them were like partial power plays, and it was in garbage time. It really didn't matter. But they had two goals when they needed them, you know, and one of them was early. And that was the one that was challenged, by the way, on the offside, on the entry by Marchand over on the right-wing side. I just think that they're very unpredictable. There's so much movement. You can't defend. You can try to take things away. So what are you going to take away? You got to overplay the bumper because Bergeron's so effective at getting that shot away or making a good pass from there. You try to defend denying Pastrnak the puck in the left wing circle. Well, what happens when he moves over to the right wing circle and Krug moves in, like I was saying earlier, and, you know, Pastrnak arcs up high and then he's got all that space to come in and you don't know what he's going to do with the puck. If you can, and then you're trying to get to pucks after a shot's taken, and DeBrusque is quick on pucks. You know, Marchand is a weapon because he can go anywhere. He'll go up top. He'll drift into the right wing circle. He'll drift down low. And he can do some different things from those areas. He'll even go into the left wing circle to make plays from there. And it's not just his shooting ability. The puck jumps off his stick. It's not necessarily a one-timer. Puck jumps off his stick when he's taking that wrist shot or snapshot. But it's his ability to make plays as well. He's got the good vision. So they're just so unpredictable in what they do. How do you game plan to defend when they're all over the place? You know, it's not a stationary power play. So you can game plan, you know, to try to be more aggressive, to try to force from high down to low, to try to take options away, or from low to high to try to take options away. I mean, there's different things that you can do defensively against them. But I think the adjustments that the Bruins make and their unpredictability make them, like, it's really hard for them to cover when they're in the seam passes. The seam passes aren't there. Okay, we'll try to. The toughest thing for them is to try to dumb it down when the seam passes aren't working. Okay, let's try to. No, just keep going, and eventually they'll break through.
Let me add one more thing to the mix.
Sure.
Because how many years, the adage in the National Hockey League is playing on the man advantage is a privilege. And I think that you've got five guys on that first unit in particular, and the second unit as well, that take pride in playing on there, that they amplify their work ethic while they're playing there. Part of their power play success, to go back to a point that Bob alluded to with a guy like Jake DeBrusk, is their ability to retrieve pucks. So let's say they don't score on one of those options that they do connect on with a shot, that they work hard to get the puck back, keep the puck in, and then you really start things start to break down for those penalty killers, no matter how good they are.
What was the biggest issue on the power play last year?
Shorthanded goals?
Yeah. How many have they allowed?
None. They gave up 15 last year, I believe it was.
There's been a couple chances. Don't get me wrong, it's not perfect, but there's been a couple chances, and the goaltenders have bailed them out. But so far, so good in that area.
So that's what you're talking about, Judd, is like the penalty killers just don't get to touch the puck a whole lot.
No,
right?
it's the way that the Bruins move the puck, move their bodies, retrieve pucks when they have those opportunities that makes them so devastating out there. I mean, if I'm DJ Smith or any of these coaches that are looking as penalty killing units trying to figure out, okay, how do we stop this? I would just get a little queasy. I'd have an air sickness bag in the vicinity.
617-779-0985. We can get to more of your calls coming up. Judd's going to head off to talk with Bruce Cassidy down at Morning Skate this morning. Bob and I will continue. Billy Jaffe will join us coming up in about 20 minutes as well as we continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
.5 the Sports Hub. The Sports Hub Hockey Show continues. Ryan Johnston joined here by Bob Beers as Judd Surratt has made his way over to Morning Skate today. Bruins in Ottawa coming up tonight at the Garden. Of course, you can hear these guys with the call of it on 98.5 the Sports Hub. Let's go back to your phone calls. Jim is up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Hey, guys, love your work, Jersey, especially you. I love your commentary.
Thank you.
With the emergence of Grizzlick and the contract situation with Krug and where we're going with the contracts in the league and where he's at, doesn't Sweeney have to trade Krug for secondary scoring this year?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't know what Krug's demands are going to be. I don't know where that's going to lie, but... I mean, we just got done doing a whole segment on the power play, and Torrey Krug is such a huge, huge part of that power play. Now, could Matt Grizzlick evolve into that type of player? Possibly. But Krug's on another level right now in terms of what he does on the power play with those guys, and they're on the same wavelength. So I don't think that is an option right now. Things could change, don't get me wrong. But as of right now, no. And I don't want to see Torrey Krug traded. So... you know, hopefully they can get something reasonable done moving forward. I think your options for getting that secondary scoring that we're talking about, you've got a large group of prospects and draft picks, but prospects, players, you know, whether it be in Providence right now or in college or wherever, but you're going to have to package something there. That's where it's going to have to come from. I don't know if it's coming from within. I don't see that right now.
Well, it's been, you've got, we've been waiting on this for positions. A long time, and it hasn't really, none of these guys have really developed into where you would trust them to be in a top six role at this point.
You're deep at other positions right now. And unless something else pops, unless something pops here, that's probably going to be the route that they have to go. I don't see Torrey Krug being the trade that brings in secondary scoring, because I think you give up a lot on your power play then.
Well, and yeah, it's like you're gonna hurt one of the best offensive aspects of your game to add more offense.
You know, you risk losing him for nothing. I understand all that. I get that. But if you're in it to win it, you're not trading Torrey Krug. So I guess it's always an option if you get the right package back, but I don't see
right.
what happened.
You also, you threw in the caveat at the beginning, which I think is important, which is, look, Don Sweeney at this point has an idea of what the asking price is going to be. I would think we've had some sort of conversations to that end.
Yep.
The fact that it hasn't gotten done yet doesn't necessarily mean that it's impossible to get done, but he probably has an idea in his head of what it's going to take to get done. So that does color your thinking a little bit when it comes time to make that decision, which would be further down the road. It wouldn't be, beginning of November that you would need to pull the trigger on anything like that. So,
yeah, if it's absolutely not going to get done, I guess it becomes a possibility. I don't see it happening.
But it also becomes a choice that you make, and we've talked about this before.
Trying to win the Stanley Cup.
Of Torrey Krug, you just say, well, you know what? We rent Torrey Krug the rest of the year. You know what? That's teams do that. We've seen teams, decide to do that and say, if we think we have a team that can win a cup this year, and it certainly looks like you do have that opportunity.
The situation could change.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. The situation could change, but right now, as it stands right now, no.
I'm making that move. You mentioned, kind of in the future, maybe Matt Grizzlick can evolve into that type of a player.
Yeah, Grizzlick, McAvoy.
I was going to say, McAvoy is another guy.
They're on the point of the second power play unit. You know, they two defensemen on the second unit.
Right. From an offensive standpoint, talk a little bit about what those guys bring to the table as far as, McAvoy's been off to a slow start offensively. Grizzlick, we've seen flashes of it in the past. He certainly can move the puck, but, what would it take to get those guys to a level where you started to think of them as more of a, particularly Grizzlick, I think, as a guy who could fill that role on a full-time basis?
I don't know if he has the threat of a shot so much as maybe as Krug does, from the top there. Mm. I think for Grizzlick, I think he's got the vision. I really do. He's terrific at going back for pucks. He's great at going back for pucks and making the first guy miss and then making a good first pass. I mean, that's one of his best assets, and being able to stick handle out of trouble in tight areas. I think that's, and for him, that is something that, he's really good at. When he's on his game, he's really good at it. And he can also shut down plays in the neutral zone defensively because he's got quick feet and the agility to be able to move laterally quickly on guys. So they've given the defenseman more of a green light here over the last few years to be more aggressive in the neutral zone. Don't back off and allow teams to get into that offensive end. So why defend in the defensive zone if you can break it up in the neutral zone? So in the D, and they do it in a way where they kind of turn and they go kind of forward at the puck carrier as opposed to just going backward the whole way. It's kind of changed the way that they kind of go at it. You're coming up the ice, all of a sudden you're kind of moving forward to go at that puck carrier. And you see it more and more. And with guys with good lateral movement and good feet and good sticks, like a Grizzlick, they can shut those plays off. McAvoy does it very well. A lot of the guys do it very well. But, I notice, Grizzlick being good at it, and McAvoy, when he's on his game, is very good at it, being able to do that and come across. So I think for Grizzlick, I don't know if you ever see that huge offensive upside. Maybe you would. I think when Krug was hurt, I think Grizzlick did an admirable job stepping in because they want a left shot out there. Mm-hmm. With that group. So Krug was hurt part of last year at the beginning of the season. I thought Grizzlick did a good job. I don't know if that translates over a whole season or not. And I don't know if the power play is as effective without Krug. But I thought he did pretty well. With McAvoy, it just his overall game is he's powerful, powerful skater, you know, guy that's aggressive in all zones. You know, sometimes that can hurt him just a bit, but I'd rather see it that way than the other way, you know, just doing nothing. I'd rather see him make aggressive mistakes, and that's just kind of figuring out when to go, when not to go, when to, you know, do different things. But I think, you know, beginning of the season, he was maybe fighting it a little bit, and it's been better here recently.
I was going to ask you that because I think we talked about him a couple weeks ago, and you know the indication was like we need to.
I don't think there's any doubt his game will come. It just it wasn't quite where it needed to be early in the season. Earlier in the season, it's still early in the season. Earlier over the first handful of games, and now it's starting to be it's starting to come around.
It's tough. It's tough too because you got to remember like he's 21 years old.
Yeah,
right. It, especially as a defender in that league, it's not uncommon to see a guy. Struggle with consistency in the in the early part of his career.
Struggling with a little bit right now too. Maybe he's fighting a little bit. You get a nice contract. You want to justify the contract, whatever the case is. I don't know. I can't get inside their heads, but I never got that nice contract. So for them, hey, it'll come. I'm not overly concerned, but they got to work at it too.
It's a good thing.
It's been better.
It's a good thing though if you're talking about those guys struggling at times and your team.
Yeah, struggling's the wrong word.
It is. I know. Yeah. It's a strong word lately. There. But like your team has given up, two goals a game,
number one
on average in the league, and everything's going right. It's.
I think your goaltender's masked a few defensive issues over the first handful of games. Those have been better, much better lately. Maybe not the third period against the Rangers, but they've been much better lately.
All right, Tim McCone gives the Sports Hub headlines. Final half hour of the Sports Hub Hockey Show coming up. We'll visit with Billy Jaffe and go around the NHL next.
Shoots and refs, flashed up the glove. Take it away.
It's the Hockey Show.
Centered fire, they score!
On 98.5, the Sports Hub. And streaming on the Sports Hub app.
The Sports Hub, Ryan Johnston and Bob Beers here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. As we get into our final half hour here, we visit with Billy Jaffe of Nesson. Joins us to go around the NHL each week at this time, and he's about to join us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline here in just a second. In fact, it looks like he's ready to go. So let's bring in Billy Jaffe. Good morning, Billy.
Good morning. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well. You excited for the Ottawa Senators paying a visit to Boston tonight? Everybody seems to be.
I am. Yeah, absolutely. Brady Tkachuk. I think Thomas Chabot's going to play. I think he practiced yesterday, so he should be ready to play. See what 8 years, what is it, 8 years, $8 million? See what that gets you. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Why not? Hopefully I'm looking forward to another Bruins big victory, but why not? Sure.
How do you think this division is shaping up so far?
Well, it's pretty good. It's interesting. You take a look, and I know we're 14, 15 maybe games in for some teams, and Tampa's in the sixth spot, so that's not what you'd expect. But, Tampa's still trying to figure some things out. Montreal, to me, has been a little bit better, perhaps, than I thought they'd be. I finally got a chance to watch them the other night. I thought, last two games, in fact, and they're kind of – I'm impressed by them. I mean, they're not a lot of big names there, but they're playing some pretty good hockey. Obviously, Buffalo is a surprise. Can they keep it up? Well, we'll see. They got thumped last night. What was the score? 6-1, 6-2?
6-1, yeah.
Yeah, in Washington. But, you include Toronto, you're talking six teams deep. So this is going to be a tough division, the Atlantic, this year. I think Buffalo will stay with it. I don't know about if they're not going to be this good all, but they're going to stay with it. I think Florida will get better. This is, to me, I don't know if Bob and you agree, this is a little bit of a, when I say a pleasant surprise, meaning I didn't know it would be this deep this year.
Yeah, I think Montreal, from a positive standpoint, is the only team that's kind of surprised me a little bit. They've won three in a row. They had a
Buffalo
big comeback
hasn't?
Win. But Buffalo went off to the same start as last year, Billy. So I'm holding off on them. And then, they're one win in their last four games for the Sabres.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm holding off judgment on them just yet. But because they had the same type of start last year, they seem to be better this year, but we'll wait and see. Florida's finding ways to get points. You know, they went on what, an 8-game point streak. They were 4-0-4.
Yeah,
you know, but they're finding ways to get points, and Bobrovsky hasn't been great yet. So, I think that the competitive balance in the division is really strong. You know, on the negative side of things, Toronto, you know, sky's falling up there for them. I mean, they're just, everybody's trying to dissect what's going on there. And Tampa Bay, you got to expect that they're going to find it here at some point, just like you said.
Yeah, you know, a few years ago, we saw this comparison. We did the other night at the NHL Network, Bob. The Washington Capitals, remember the year that they lost, and they come back, and they come back, and the start to their season was not so good for a while. And then, you know what they ended up doing? Winning the Stanley Cup after taking about 8 weeks to really right the ship, so to speak. I'm not saying that that's exactly what's going to happen to Tampa this year, but this trip, this Swedish trip, you know, they go to Sweden now for about 6 days after they lost last night to the Islanders. It's kind of been hanging over their heads a little bit, and they've been looking at their schedule. You know, I talked to the coaches about their schedule. They didn't love it and whatever. And when I say they didn't love it, meaning it just didn't have a lot of good flow to their schedule early on. The feeling is if Tampa can right the ship in mid-December or so, that they feel that they'll be in a good spot.
And I don't disagree with that. Yeah. I mean, as far as them turning it around, they're just too good. They're too deep. I mean, Hedman's hurt right now, so that is a big factor. But yep. And we saw what they looked like last year without Hedman in the playoffs against Columbus. Even though he played the first couple of games, he wasn't Victor Hedman.
He wasn't there.
And and then he didn't play the last couple, and they lost those as well. So he is a huge, huge part of that team, and they didn't have to deal with many injuries last year. But Hedman might be the most important guy injury-wise on that team. Maybe Vasilevsky, but Hedman right there.
I would agree. I mean, he plays so much. He impacts the game. He touches the game in so many ways. The thing is, they feel that he'll be okay for Sweden. I mean, that's one of the big reasons that they're going there, that the team picked is because of him. But they had to put him on IR to call up some other guys, too. They have a couple of other injuries as well. Sorelli was in and out of the lineup. He's back. There's a few others. But you know what? I think that this team, they're trying to play the game the right way. The big question was coming up, did they try and change too much? Well, and I think we may have talked about it on this show before, Beersy and RJ. You know, they lost a lot, an awful lot in leadership and especially in shutdown type guys on the PK. And their PK stinks this year. But, you know, they lost Girardi to retirement, and he was a human shot blocking machine. They didn't re-sign Anton Strahlman. He's in Florida. That was a big loss. And then they also lost the leader in Ryan Callahan. So he retired / long-term injury. It's a big change, too. So they're trying to figure out some of that leadership as well there right now.
Billy, prior to the show, Billy always sends me a few ideas of topics we can hit on. And I thought the first one that you sent today was kind of interesting in that you just said we're seeing more crazy high-skilled goals from the young generation of players. What's getting you going about that today?
Everybody's got a skills coach from the age of 9 years old. Everybody's doing between the legs, and everybody's doing lacrosse-style goals, and everybody, you know, it's the YouTube generation. God, I sound like an old man, but it is, and everybody sees these goals, and they're going to try them. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, Beersy knows this. I mean, guys would mess around at the end of practice doing certain things before, but now we're finding guys that, you know, they've got the cojones to do them in-game. We saw Svechnikov with his goal the other night in Carolina, which was impressive about that. Beersy, I don't know if you agree with me on this or not. Almost more impressive than what we saw like Mike Leck do years ago when he was at Michigan. Remember when he cupped the puck on the heel of his stick and went back, and then he turned his wrist? This guy almost went, it was like slicing through hot butter. How he got the underneath the stick, and then he flipped it around the puck that way. That was pretty impressive. But, you know, to have the guts and the gumption to do that in-game, it takes a lot. You know, if you fail at it, you take a lot of ridicule. We saw Matthew Tkachuk come off the bench the other night, or off the wall, I mean, in overtime, and have a between-the-leg goal. It was a sick shot. Mm. But it was an instinctive type thing. But these guys, the young generation practices this stuff. This is what they do regularly, much more than I would ever recall in Beersy. You can tell me if I'm wrong or I mean, agree or disagree. I mean, we'd screw around But, you know, these guys are doing this regularly in skill sessions, these kind of plays.
When Merrick Malik did it, it was a big deal in a shootout. In like the 12th round of the shootout.
Yes. Washington against New York Rangers. I remember that.
Now we see it on a nightly basis. Yeah, it's been, the skills are fun to watch. Hey, is that's what they want, right? There's less clutching and grabbing, but let's see more skill. Well, they've got more skill. It's coming. Sometimes it's maybe, I don't know. I love seeing it once in a while. I still like seeing the harder style play as well. So, I have a good combination of both.
I think that's where I think a lot of us fall is that those highlight reel goals are awesome, but at the same time, we still want the physicality that we've come to expect from this game, right?
Well,
we still want it to be
hope.
Yeah.
But the regular season, you're going to see more and more of these skill plays. We saw the kid, Sonny Milano. He did it a few weeks ago for the Columbus Blue Jackets. And, I mean, you want to talk about, having the guts to do that with John Tortorella behind the bench, because the goal worked. He scored it. But if he didn't, do you think he would have seen the ice for two games in a row? Probably not. You know what? The regular season, to me, though, is going to become much more of a skill session, so to speak, in speed. And the playoffs is where we're going to have to wait for that hard hockey that all three of us really are passionate about.
All right, let's talk about some teams that are making some noise in the positive direction. The Islanders, 8 straight now.
Yeah. How the hell are they doing it?
I don't know. That's your job. That's why we have you on. Explain this.
I've been watching them a little bit. They're still doing the very, very deliberate, through the neutral zone. They get the puck in. They are probably the team that chips and chases, dumps and chases more than any. They recover, though, real well. They're incredibly aggressive on their forecheck. They play, they're still working four lines. Like every team, they got some injuries. They're getting production from Derek Brassard, who they signed to a 1-year deal. He's got 4 goals on the year. Guys like Barzal and Bailey continue to score. Brock Nelson's gotten off to a solid start. But so the point is, it's a lot of players, RJ and Beersey, that they use. Barry Trotz controls the neutral zone very well still. I think there's this believability in him and in Mitch Korn, and there's another goaltending coach there too. They brought in Varlamov. I wasn't a big proponent of the deal. I don't know about you guys when it happened, but right now he's proven me a bit wrong. The fact is, we laud the Bruins tandem of Tuca and Yarrow. The truth is the Islanders tandem of Greiss and Varlamov has really stepped up after a shaky start, not an ideal start, and they've been really good. They're going every other game right now. So I do believe in the Barry Trotz, and I believe what he preaches. It obviously resonates with the team. And he gets the most out of him. Whether you can sustain that and be a good playoff team, Beersey, I don't know. But the way that they're playing right now is a hard way for teams to compete against.
Well, and I saw the other day, or I heard the other day, maybe it was yesterday, that they only have 2 players that average more than 20 minutes of ice time a game.
Yep.
Well, that's pretty impressive. I'm looking at it right now. It's Pelech and
2 D-men, Pelech and Pulock.
Pulock, yep. Yeah. So they're the only 2 guys that average more than 20 minutes. So he's using everybody. And it's a style where sometimes it's not all that exciting, but they're getting the timely scoring and they're shutting teams down and they're frustrating. They just beat Tampa last night. So, I mean,
yes,
I don't know when we see them. I'm not sure when the Bruins play them first, but looking forward to, I don't know if I'm looking forward to seeing them.
It may not be the most exciting game you see all year, but it might be interesting at least.
No. But they're not, they're not sitting back. The thing is, there's dump and wait in the neutral zone, and then there's dump and it'd be aggressive. And they're lean more towards the aggressive side, at least.
You have to now. When you have the opportunity to be aggressive, the whole theory now is why defend in the defensive zone when you can defend up the ice?
Exactly.
Team out west making a little noise in the early going. I mean, there's actually a couple of them. We've talked in the last couple of weeks, I think, about Edmonton. Out in that Pacific Division, but Vancouver's right behind them as well. I think that's catching some people by surprise.
Vancouver is a much better team than the Edmonton Oilers when it's all said and done. Edmonton is a 2-player team. They have 2 of the best players in the entire universe in McDavid and Dreisaitl. Love Dreisaitl. I really give the kid is, just an all-world player, but yet he's got to play. Not has to play. He's playing with McDavid, so Connor gets almost all the attention. But I digress. I go to a team that you said in Vancouver is, they're a better team. And, Travis Green's got them playing fun hockey. Their power play has rocketed up. I don't know. I think they're 6th, maybe 7th in the league now. They've They had a four-goal power play goal game the other night against L.A. They're using a very similar set that the Bruins do. Bo Horvat took over as captain. He's a real good bumper in the middle. The big addition for this team, though, well, there's two players, but one in particular, I don't say went under the radar, but didn't maybe get as much attention, was JT Miller going from the Rangers over there. And he's been real vocal.
From Tampa.
From Tampa, sorry. Mm-hmm. Beg your pardon. From Tampa. My bad. He's been very vocal for them and very much what they needed in and off the on and off the ice. And he's provided net front presence on the power play. He's done a real nice job there. Of course, they have a young all-world player in Pettersson who continues. He's got one of the sweetest shots I've seen in years. Beersey, would you agree? I mean, no. His release, and it's like watching Mickelson with a lefty swing.
We don't get to see him as much, right? We don't get to see him all that much. So when you see him, you kind of appreciate what he's capable of doing. JT Miller's been a big, you're right, he's been a big addition to that team. He was a salary cap casualty for the Tampa Bay Lightning. And then the other guy that is Quinn Hughes, right? Quinn Hughes, yes. Rookie. He got hurt last night, so I'm not sure the severity of his injury, but Hughes is off to a great start with 10 points in his first 13 games, and he's averaging just under 20 minutes of ice time.
Yeah, and they moved him, I think, 6 games ago to the top power play unit, and that's what helped catapult the power player, ignite it to a level that it needed to get to. And the kid is like a slinky out there. You say there's no way that this kid can play defense in the NHL, and then yet he continues to be nimble and he continues to be slimy good out there. And it's fun to watch, and he's got a great, hockey head, hockey IQ. He's the older brother by a couple of years of Jack Hughes, the number one overall pick this last year, who went to New Jersey.
Staying out west with the Winnipeg Jets, this drama with Dustin Byfuglien, of course, he's been away from the team at the start of the season. They really haven't gotten into the reasons behind that. But then it comes out this week that Byfuglien had ankle surgery without involving the team. If he was, if there were any plans to bring him back anytime soon, clearly he wouldn't be available anytime soon. Is there been any light shed on the relationship between the team and the player at all?
No, not much. People have tried to investigate. We've tried to sniff around, just figure out what's going on. And it's very, Kevin Cheveldayoff and the Byfuglien camp. Chevy's the GM of the Winnipeg Jets, and Dustin Byfuglien and his people, Ben Hakanson is his agent. Have been very quiet. The only thing I heard about a month ago was that he just didn't know if he could come back, his body, if he could take it. And that's what he was trying to, could he do it? Could he handle it? Could he train again to be where he needs to be? He's not the biggest training guy to begin with. So, and then this comes out. Now, the quandary now is this could be an NHLPA kind of messy situation. Because he had to get suspended. It's legalese stuff to start the year for roster spot and everything. But now, did he have a hockey injury? Is he going to expect to get paid when the Jets are saying, well, wait, you didn't notify of this? And, at least publicly, Kevin Cheveldayoff has just said, I don't really have anything to say. I don't have much information except this, meaning he's had surgery. Surgery was a week ago in Minnesota, I believe. I think it was a week ago. And he said, this is the situation where we're at. But there just doesn't seem to be a lot of info coming out. Byfuglien is a pretty quiet guy to begin with. He's a kind of a country type of kid, a fisherman, a hunter, et cetera. It's odd. It doesn't, he talked about his love for Winnipeg, Beersey, and how he loved playing there. But yet then he kind of goes all quiet here. So it has a very dramatic feel to it. And that's a shame, because Winnipeg, and they're tough without him. I know they won last night, but I think they got outshot like 3-1 last night by the San Jose Sharks.
Yeah, it kind of feels like with the timing of this and having the surgery now, there's
4 months out.
Yeah, it's questions about, was he dealing with an injury during the offseason and didn't like the way he was being treated about it? I mean, it kind of opens the questions about that and potentially the medical staff and all of that. So, like you said, a lot of drama around there. We appreciate the time as always, Billy. And you on the air tonight?
6 o'clock tonight.
Excellent.
The Bruins.
We'll be looking forward to it.
All right, see you later, guys.
Thanks as always. Billy Jaffe joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. 6 o'clock, you can see him on Nesson. 6:30, you can hear Judd Surratt and Bob Beers on the call as the Bruins take on the Senators. Monday night, they welcome in Pittsburgh as well. We'll have lots more to talk about next week here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Beersy, good luck with the game today.
Thanks, right.
And tomorrow, keeping busy.
See you next week.
All right. We'll see you next week here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Stick around for Gasper and Murray next.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Chuck Sarai, Bob Beers, the home of the Bees, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.